Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This is Newsroom Robots, the podcast where we explore the intersection of artificial intelligence and the news industry. I'm Nikita Roy, data scientist, media entrepreneur, and one of the many founders currently building their ventures at the Harvard Innovation Labs. On the Newsroom Robots, I'm excited to bring you insightful conversations with industry experts about how AI is impacting the way we do journalism. Today, I'm excited to have Uli Koppen joining me on Newsroom Robots. She's the head of the AI and Automation Lab at Bavarian Broadcasting, Germany's public broadcaster, and co-leads BR Data, the newsroom's investigative data team. Uli and her award-winning team are pioneering the future of AI in journalism, drawing upon the experience of journalists, coders, and product developers to specialize in investigative data stories, interactive storytelling, and experimentation with AI. In 2019, she spent a year at Harvard and MIT as a Nieman Fellow to focus on algorithmic accountability, machine bias, and automation in journalism. She was also part of the Online News Association's Women's Leadership Accelerator in 2022. Today, we learn about the different AI products Uli is heading, her team's experiments with generative AI, and touch upon her team's impressive portfolio of algorithmic accountability reporting. Welcome to Newsroom Robots, Uli. It's such a pleasure to have you join us.
Thanks for having me, Nikita.
So, Uli, you're heading AI efforts at one of Europe's most renowned broadcasting corporations, Bavarian Broadcasting, and you're one of the key figures at the center of this transformative period that we're in right now about innovation with AI in newsrooms. And so I'm really looking forward to kind of explore your work and hear your story about how you've gotten here today. And to start off, I want to set the context for our listeners. So could you start by sharing more about what your role really looks like and how deep is AI integration at BR?
Sure. I'm more or less having a dream job, I have to say, because I'm heading three teams at Bavarian Broadcasting, co-heading three teams with a dear colleague of mine. And we are into investigation with algorithms. That's one of my missions, of our missions. And the other mission is product, such as automated formats, automated texts, automated news briefings. And our third product, so to say, is strategy, because we want to extract what we learn and present that to our management that we can make the right decisions and see where we are heading in an informed way.
And how is AI integration currently within the entire news cycle at BR?
Yeah, we just had an internal AI day at Bavarian Broadcasting, and there we had the chance to see all the different perspectives with which we are looking at AI and automation, from archiving to producing over investigation to distribution. And more or less in the whole news cycle, we are having AI and or automation. There are several teams working on AI and automation. It's not just our three teams. For example, our colleagues in the archives, they are really pioneers in using AI. They're using face recognition algorithms for tagging content, different extraction methods with AI to do the metadata. But we, in our team, our data team and our AI and automation lab we've built 3.5 years ago, we are focusing on algorithmic investigations together with the data team and the investigative team, and on the product side, as I said, on automated formats. And this is how we are landing in the automation environment in our broadcaster, but we're having a lot of other teams looking at other aspects of automation.
That's really impressive. Like, the level of AI integration seems to be so broad and deeply embedded between all the teams that we are. I'm interested to know more about how the strategy and understand how BR's overall strategy comes to when it's talking about AI, and what does that look like when you're maintaining your day-to-day operations?
Well, our most important principle is that technology really should support our mission and improve the quality of our journalism. So we installed our AI ethic guidelines very early on, already in 2020. We published them, you can find them online, and luckily a lot of newsrooms are publishing their guidelines right now. And there we have written down AI should help us to use our resources effectively, and it should help us to produce a better journalism. In terms of better journalism, we are using it for investigations. We're using AI as a tool, for example. We're using, for example, image recognition algorithms to find certain data, to sift through large amounts of data. And we're looking at AI as a topic, so we're using the skill set we're having in our team also to investigate AI and to look at, for example, AI recruiting systems, how training data is used to feed generative AI. In terms of better journalism, this also means how can we reach our users better? And there we are trying to produce products that help us to reach our users in a more personalized way, but in a public service kind of personalization. And in terms of using our resources more effectively, we are trying to build tools that help our journalists to produce different versions of our stories. For example, to do shorter versions, to do audio versions, to do graphic versions. Because with less and less resources, we have to try to reach our users better and better. And we have to find tools to help our journalists do that. And this is what our team does.
I want to get more into that product personalization that you were talking about. How do you kind of maintain the ethical boundaries as well when you're building that product? And what really does it look like?
Yeah, that is a very good question because we're still finding that out. We are trying to use personalization to support our mission to do journalism for everyone. And as we all know, this is getting harder and harder because user interests are getting more and more fragmented. We don't want to personalize such as Amazon or such as Netflix. They are very sophisticated in doing that, but we also have a public service mission, meaning we have to inform people. We don't want to do clickbait. We don't want to send people into filter bubbles. So we have to personalize. We have to find a way to personalize in a public service way, meaning we are trying to offer different versions of stories that people can consume our news in a seamless way. And we are also trying to regionalize, meaning to find the right version of the story for the people that are located at a certain place or that are having interest in a certain place.
I want to understand that product more as well. Is that something when people come to your site based on IP location, you're able to generalize it based on where they are, and how are you kind of tracking that data to personalize information for them?
Let me give you an example because it makes things more vivid to understand. We are working on a prototype called Remix Regional, and this is a regionalized news feed that is created around a certain point of interest. So we are taking the linear audio we are using for the radio, we are segmenting it with an algorithm, and then we are tagging it with a different algorithm. And with this kind of metadata infrastructure, we can personalize audio. We can offer you the audio and the news briefing with news that happened around a certain place. We user tested that quite a bit, and users are very excited to get the news that happened around a certain place. And it also is part of our mission to offer regionalized news. So this really fits to our mission as a public service broadcaster and is a very good example for public service personalization.
That's really interesting. And I'm trying to understand more of the different breadths of products that you have. And I came across data-driven publishing as well. That was something that you, your team pioneered on. Could you expand more on BR's approach towards data-driven publishing?
Sure. Data-driven publishing is for us a way to reach our users in a better way. And also we are trying to look at our content as data. We are not only trying to do quality journalism, but we are also trying to offer quality data to our users. And as I said, we are trying to offer our news in a more and more seamless way if we succeed down the road. And data-driven publishing is a framework we developed to produce and deliver the news in a user-centered way. And our goals are, we want to, as I said, do journalism for everyone and offer the news in small bits. For example, our Remix regional prototype is around the idea to do modular journalism and to really break our news up in a non-linear way and to offer it in a personalized way that people can really enjoy the news how they want to enjoy them. Also, within the framework is the idea that we are using automation projects as a vehicle for digitization. So Remix Regional is also to build up a new metadata infrastructure. We are very excited about the product, so people really like the idea, but the product is only the vehicle to build up the infrastructure behind it. Because we are having all those news bits, as I said, they are tagged and we are storing them in the cloud. And with this infrastructure, we are having the basis to personalize down the road as we want to personalize. And to be honest, right now, I would say we don't know how we want to personalize in 2 or 3 years. But this kind of infrastructure helps us to get there.
So what products are your team working on as well right now? I think that's the AI innovation. I see a lot of innovation coming from Europe, especially, and from your team. So I'm kind of interested to know, what new projects are your team currently exploring?
We are currently exploring a lot of products around language models. For example, how we can use different language models to offer text services to our journalists and to our users. We built a summarizer, for example, to do shorter versions of texts. This also fits to our modular approach. And we are trying to build up a hybrid workflow within our newsroom. It's always about building a tool and then also building up a workflow within the newsroom. We are also using it for headline generation or for user filters, user comment filters that help our newsroom to sift through the large amounts of comments that arrive in our newsrooms. And those language models, this is a very agile kind of work because we have a natural language generation expert in our team and he's always experimenting. And we're having, of course, our daily and weekly meetings and we're talking about ideas. And every time we're saying, oh, there was a new idea in the newsroom, he is already saying, oh, I've tried that out and I can show you a little prototype around that. So every week there are new language models coming out. We are trying them out. And in a very agile way, we are trying to understand what the newsroom is needed. And we are trying to answer those needs with those little prototypes.
And as you're going about experimenting with generative AI and thinking about it, what do you see the potential of generative AI, especially for newsrooms right now?
I guess it's this very agile nature that is part of generative AI right now, and also the very agile reaction we are experiencing right now in our newsroom. So people are really longing for different solutions right now. They can put their hands on AI, and this is the great difference now than a year or 2 years before when we had to go to the newsroom and say, look, we have this prototype. Do you want to try it out? Now it's the other way around. People are really coming to us and say, oh, I've tried that out and this seems to be a great solution for this and this. Can you help me there? So it's the, I would say, tech environment that is evolving very quickly, but it's also the interest in the newsroom to really work with it. And that has changed a lot and that also helps us to innovate in a much faster way than before.
And I'm quite curious, when you're building all of these products and going through the different stages of the product lifecycle, especially with something such as an emerging technology like generative AI, how are you navigating the different stages and challenges that come about with it?
That is a very great question because we're about to find that out. We are always thinking about it as you start off with a small prototype and with a very fast little, well, I would say float, and then it's getting bigger and bigger and it's getting part of the big ship in the end. And we are always trying to do both. We are trying to do a small prototype and we are trying to stay agile with it and test out new technology with it. And then we are trying, if the idea proves to be good, then we are trying to integrate that into our infrastructure. And this is always the project stage when it's getting difficult because, of course, we are having legacy systems. We don't have APIs where we need them. So we are needing those projects to really move the big ship. And this is how we try to proceed. And this is also part of our framework you were talking about, data-driven publishing, to really innovate within a traditional legacy system we are as a broadcaster.
Yeah, and getting into generative AI a bit more, I'm interested to know, how's your newsroom kind of dealing with hallucinations and the risks that comes about with it? And what kind of models, is OpenAI still something, the biggest model that your team is looking at? Or how has it been in comparison with the other models that have come about?
Yeah, hallucination is really a big problem when you talk about journalism, because we, of course, we can't deal with mistakes we're publishing. So this is something that shouldn't happen to us. So this is why we are right now recommending within our newsrooms to use generative AI tools for any kind of creative process like storyboarding or first prototypes in writing, first prototypes in image generation, but we don't use it right now for user-facing content without any checks. There are also a lot of copyright questions that are part of our internal process to say what is okay to take and what is not okay to take. So hallucination is something that makes a lot of products not really useful for the newsroom, because you have to imagine journalists are typing so fast and there is so fast and, for example, summarizing a text, like reading it, understanding it, summarizing it, that a tool really has to be, well, fact-proof. If they have to fact-check the output of such a tool, it's not worth using it because they are typing faster in most of the times. So hallucination is something we try to reduce in our, like everyone in the AI world, when we're experimenting, and we are using the open AI models, but we're also using open source models, because this also has the beauty that we're not uploading data to other platforms, to other companies. We are also dealing with sensible data when you look at investigations. So we could never upload a leak there and say, okay, let's use a language model and let me find interesting leads within this data. So there are several problems with such platforms and open AI, but nevertheless, they're having a great language model and we are trying things out. It depends very much on the use case, what kind of model we are using.
So depending on the use case, you also have your own custom language model for your newsroom that your journalists can use for more private and sensitive data. And then OpenAI is something for more general public information. Am I understanding that right?
Yes, absolutely. We are training different open source models we can host ourselves. And there we can also, we are in an experimentation phase right now. This is not productive right now. But what is interesting for us is, how can you use it for investigation methods? And then you always have to host the language model yourself because you don't want to upload data to foreign platforms.
And when you're implementing AI projects just in general with your experience so far, what have you found has been the biggest challenge? Because technology integration is not always so smooth as it seems. So how have you navigated those challenges?
Yeah, a lot of challenges. And most of them are cultural, to be honest. We are part of a legacy system. We are a public broadcaster. So we are having a federal system. We are having different broadcasters in different parts of the country, which makes sense because then we can cover certain topics better. But that also makes decision-making very hard. So we have also federal decision-making systems. And if you're working with data and AI, you have to make sure things are standardized. We need standardized metadata. We need the same systems. For example, we need the same content management systems that we can exchange content in an easy way. And all those things are not very standardized in a federal system. And this is something we have to overcome. And this is something that will take a long time to overcome because it's part of our structure. That is the first thing. And the second thing is, sometimes we're still meeting silos, so people and also teams that are working very well as a team, but that are not very connected to the rest of the house. So there we are always trying to form new interdisciplinary squads, new interdisciplinary projects to break that up a little bit and to make it possible to really work with different perspectives on one project, because with AI and data, you always need the editorial perspective, you need the, as you know, the technical perspective, you need the legal perspective, you need so many people at one table, and this sometimes really holds you back.
Yeah, and I want to delve into that deeper, because as a leader, you probably working at a with a very interdisciplinary team, you also need buy-in from all different stakeholders. So how do you, first of all, measure the success of your AI projects and then get buy-in from all of the different stakeholders when working with this emerging technology?
Yeah, it has been a process to understand how to communicate those projects in a good way. And this is also part of data-driven publishing and those projects we use to change the culture and also change the technical environment. We are calling those projects Trojan unicorns because they are not only solving certain challenges for us, they are also solving certain bigger issues.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
We have to look at as a broadcaster. For example, siloed teams, interdisciplinary work, APIs between different systems. And also, if you're having a prototype, it makes it much easier to communicate to the newsroom. Why should they, for example, type in metadata and help us to train an algorithm to do that in the future? If they see such a prototype, they can understand my audio, for example, if you look at Remix Regional, my audio is used in a completely different way. I'm reaching more users. I'm reaching different users. So it makes sense to put in a little more effort to do that, for example. And the same prototype also helps us to talk to the management to say, this is the way how we want to distribute audio in the future. This is only one possible product. You can imagine three other different products that look the same or look a little different. But then it makes it much easier to say, okay, let's touch a legacy system, let's rework our metadata infrastructure, or let's look at the data hub we need, because then you understand much better what you're getting out of it. And working with concrete projects, extracting the learnings for the management, and then make the right decisions really help us to do the change we need.
Yeah, and talking about that, I'd like to explore more about what success looks like for you in terms of what's been your successful AI project and what factors really contributed to that success.
We just published a very fast experiment. I talked about the language model experimentation we did, and we just published a user comment filter for our newsroom. And that was a very small project. The newsroom came to us and said, you know, we want to integrate more diverse audience within the discussions we have on our website. We only have such a big amount of user comments we can sift through, and we have certain indicators we are looking for in user comments. Can you help us find them? And then we fine-tuned a language model, and the language model helped us to find certain user comments that addressed the newsroom, for example, questions or a certain hints to mistakes, for example, where you really want to react fast as a newsroom. And doing so, we had a very fast communication with the newsroom, which was because they had a problem and we solved it. That is always the best way to get in touch. And also then we used an existing communication channel to get the output to the newsroom. Sometimes we think about an extra website or an extra tool they have to use, but they're already using so many tools, it makes absolutely sense to get into the channels and the tools they already have. And we did a Teams integration into Microsoft Teams that we are using within the broadcaster as a communication tool. Then they're getting an alert within the system, and then they're getting a link to the comment they have to look at in a deeper way. And that was a very small project, but it had everything what we need. We have a problem that had to be solved. We had a very good communication between the different stakeholders, and we used a communication channel that was already there. And for us, that is kind of a role model also to use for our bigger projects, because sometimes it's the small things that make projects more difficult. And here we can learn something, I guess.
Yeah, the small things make a big difference. And I also want to talk about another equally important area that your work has been focused on, which is algorithmic accountability. And you've worked in some really interesting projects and impressive investigations on your team. Could you really walk us through your approach at BR towards approaching this really deeply, highly impactful subject?
Yeah, when we are doing such an investigation, we always want to spark a debate on how we want to use algorithms as a society, and also look at the spots where we are using algorithms and AI in a way that is somehow harmful to society, and where algorithms are used for a perhaps sensible area where they're not ready or not ready yet. For example, we did an investigation on an AI recruiting system because there are so many recruiting systems in the US and also in the UK, and now beginning also in Europe, that are half automatic or even completely automated, where applicants are sitting in front of their screen and they can talk for, in this case, 30 seconds. And then the software promises to extract personality traits to help an HR department to make a decision if this person is a good fit for your team or not. And we asked a lot of questions to those different software companies. And in this case, and usually when you ask those questions, what kind of training data you use, what kind of models do you have, then you're getting very unsatisfying answers. And a USP of our team is that we can do technical experiments. So we tried to use the software, and we hired an actress, and we did a lot of videos with her. And she tried to reperform the same speech over and over again, so we could see that the software is stable. And it was relatively stable. But as soon as she put on glasses, as she put on a headscarf, or she changed her outfit, the output was largely different. And we also did some technical tests, like we only changed one variable of the video. For example, the background, when a person was standing in front of a white wall or in front of a bookshelf. And the output was really different in this case. And with those statistical experiments, we can tell stories that we could never tell without those experiments. Because if you only ask questions, you always get answers that really don't help you to tell the story. So we try to use our programming skills to tell those stories and to get the investigation out. And then we're publishing it in all the different channels we have as public service broadcaster.
Wow, that's a really deep commitment to kind of ensuring algorithmic accountability and a really impressive investigation series that your team has taken over there. I also can't help but wonder really what the future is looking like for BR, and how do you envision AI coming about over there, and any upcoming projects that you're really excited about seeing into fruition?
Well, I'm always into the cultural aspect, so I'm hoping to see a future where we don't have silos anymore, where we can really have people developing from different departments to other departments, and where we have data flowing in the broadcaster, in all the different departments, by the way. Investigation is one important part, but we also have administration, we have all the different producing systems, and we also have this German public broadcasting systems with all the different broadcasters. So it's quite a sophisticated system you have to connect to get the data flow. And this is where we're heading and where we're trying to get. In terms of AI use, I guess it's getting more and more seamless because I guess within this year, we will see that AI is being part of all the tools we're already using. I guess even in Word, we will see kind of a GPT integration where you get suggestions how you write, and also for all the different producing tools we're using for video and for audio. There will be very sophisticated AI assistance tools, and we are trying to educate our colleagues and get help that those tools are really being used, that we're getting to the real work, I would say, to do the reporting, to do the analysis, where we have to put real resources in as journalists. So I want to see that shift from work that is tedious and that doesn't help us do very good reporting to really being able to use those tools to do that. And also the investigation part. This is, I would say, my heart project. I'm absolutely into algorithmic accountability reporting, and I want to see more newsrooms pick up the speed because I guess we need more reporting on that. And we are partnering with a lot of newsrooms all over Germany and also internationally to do those investigations and to get them out. And also to explore some ways to do the storytelling in a right way, because very often the storytelling for tech stories is not easy. And also to get attention for those stories is not easy. So we are exploring different ways to get it out to people and to get the message out. And this is something we want to explore even more. On the product side, I'm very excited about those language models and all the services we can offer with those language models. And also hosting them ourselves gives us a lot of opportunity to really work with sensible data. And this is what we want to explore more.
And touching upon the education about AI and educating a team about that, I also just wanted to touch upon and learn about how has the perception of using AI in newsroom been like in Germany and in the region that you're in? How is your company culture like, your newsroom culture like, regarding the use of AI, not just for your team, but just like journalists and editors? Are they embracing this? Has there been a lot of fear? What has that been looking like?
I have the feeling that we had kind of a soft start because we already embraced data and also AI for some years now, and people are used to it more in our newsroom. Of course, it's always two-sided. There are also fears of people working, for example, in the design area. How is my job going to look like in the next year when we are using, for example, tools like Midjourney or other image generating tools? So that is very serious because people are really worrying about their jobs. Nevertheless, people are still open to use it because they understand, I have the impression, that this won't cost their jobs in German public broadcasting. It might help to transform their jobs, and most of them are embracing it, in my point of view. Regarding the whole news landscape in Germany, I can see a very fast pace in integrating AI and automation right now. I've been to different conferences, and I have the feeling that the publishing houses are really embracing it. This also causes fear at the employee basis, because of course there will be a lot of changes, and also some publishing houses have announced to reduce jobs because of AI. Not always this has to be taken for granted that AI is the reason to do that. For example, Springer has announced that, and it is also clear that it is more about digitization than AI, and it's more about how they want to manage their regional journalism in the future. So AI is only one small reason for a big management change there. But of course, this is something that is discussed very broadly here in Germany.
And you had mentioned a bit about image generation and your newsroom and illustrators, the design team being worried about it. I kind of want to just touch upon that a bit. We've spoken about large language models. How have you been thinking about the other image generation tools like Midjourney, DALL-E in your newsroom?
Well, we've done also some investigations on that, and we found some very serious biases. And also we looked at the training data that is out there and published, said that there is not a lot of training data you can look at. It's only one training data set that is one example for the training data that goes into image generation. And we find a lot of worrisome things in there. So there are things like porn, illegal content, things we already know by scientific papers. And in our investigation, we also found there is sensible private data in there. So you can find, for example, addresses and account information, bank account information for people that are connected to names and to images. So there is still a lot of things we have to solve as a society and also the firms that are using this training data. So I'm kind of two-sided. I'm always excited about the new possibilities that are in new tools, but this is a very early stage and we have to be aware of the copyright questions. We have to be aware of all the biases that are in the image generation data, for example. So I guess we have always also there look at both sides, the dark side and also the possibilities.
So because of those concerns, is your newsroom currently staying away from exploring image generation tools right now?
We're exploring them, but only for internal use. So for any creative process, we're using them, but we're not using them for user-facing projects and products right now because of that.
Yeah, sounds like a lot of exciting times ahead for VR and its audience with all of the explorations that you and your teams have been doing over there. And I want to shift gears a bit and get a bit personal and ask you the journey that you've had kind of moving from reporting to leading AI initiatives. I think that's really unique and inspiring to hear about what your path has been like. So could you share more about how you've navigated this transition and any advice you have for people who are looking to follow a similar path?
Sure. I'm a journalist by heart, so I'm not a coder. I somehow dived into the technical world by building different digital teams. And at a certain point, I had the impression it makes absolutely sense to integrate more people with data skills into our teams, because data for me was always the basis for more or less everything digital. So we started to integrate people that could program, that could build websites, and then also we started with data analysis. And then at a certain point, we also understood, hey, I guess now we're a data team. We have to shift completely to data. And I learned on the way. I dived into different statistical methods. I also tried out programming, but said that I'm not a statistician and I'm also not a programmer. And this is also something that encouraged me to really follow what you're curious about. It's not about what you've studied. It's about what you're interested in. And also you can join forces with people that have a different skill set than yourself. So it makes sense to have a certain perspective and then dive into different other perspectives. And this is also how we build our interdisciplinary teams. I'm deeply believing in interdisciplinarity, like you have a certain expertise you're bringing to a team, and then you're willing to dive into the expertise of the others. And this is also how we're having a lot of fun as a team. So this is how we shifted from being a transmedia team to a data team, and then how we added the AI and automation lab, because it just felt urgent to integrate this kind of skill set. And yeah, have fun. That would be my tip.
And I'm also interested to know you were evolving the different stages of evolving from a data team to an AI and automation team. One aspect that I did not meant talk about a lot was like the automation aspect that your team has been working on. Could you share some more insights into what that has been looking like in the early stages of AI as your team was evolving probably?
You know, we're kind of pragmatic when it comes to methods. We're always interested in new methods. This is why we added the AI part, but we more or less take the technology that does the job. So we also have data to text data to graphics processes we still need and we still use because it's so much simpler than AI, and sometimes also the output is more reliable. So we talked about hallucinations, and in certain cases you can't accept any kind of hallucinations. So this is where we're using automation, and automation is also part of building data pipelines, doing practical data journalism, like scraping data from websites, getting them in a database, analyzing them. So you need all kinds of automation for the investigation part and for the product part, and AI is just one part of it, I would say.
This has just been such a huge breadth of applications that I've heard about, and that's been really such an exciting and fascinating conversation. As I wrap up, I just wanted to hear more about what your personal journey has been like with AI, and so where do you use AI, or what AI tools or applications have you really found useful in like your day-to-day work and personal life?
Well, you know, I'm very bad in advertising things, so I'm a real journalist who doesn't advertise. And the thing is, I'm also, to tell you the truth, I'm setting up my personal tech setup over the summer. I'm using part of the summer to get a completely new tech setup, and I'm currently trying out a bunch of different tools. My take on it is try things out, but try to understand what tech should solve for you and then try to find the solution. I'm not a tech solutionist. I'm more a pragmatic user, I would say.
Are you a ChatGPT fan or a daily, like, avid user of it?
Absolutely. I have two little daughters, and sometimes I'm getting tired of telling new stories. So I'm typing in what they want to hear, and I'm getting out stories. That is great. And they love that. And they are trying to find out how it works already. And of course, I'm also using it for getting ideas. If I'm doing speeches, if I'm getting into new fields, I'm trying to see what's in there. But then, of course, the whole experiments we have in the team, but that's not personal.
And how is it performing in the German language, all of these LLM models?
It's always less good than in English. That's a little disappointing, but German is a big enough language to be trained well. And also the language differences, they're getting less and less important in the future. So I'm hopeful for smaller languages to be able to be used also in this environment.
Well, Uli, this has really been a fascinating conversation. And I, as I think I said before we started, I've been a huge fan of your work. And so this has been really exciting to delve more deeper into all of the different projects that your team has been working on and get a sneak peek of probably what the future of journalism is going to look like at BR. And your insights into really AI's role have certainly sparked a lot of ideas for me, and I'm pretty sure for our listeners. And it's been really great to have you. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us in Newsroom Robots. I know you're really, really busy and being at the center of all of this. So thank you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Nikita. It was a great conversation. Thank you.
That was Uli Koppen, the head of the AI and Automation Lab and co-lead of BR Data at Bavarian Broadcasting. This podcast is made possible thanks to the Harvard Innovation Lab's Spark Grant. I'm Nikita Roy, and this is Newsroom Robots.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.